It is with great spiritual deliberation that we approach this text, not in the traditional sense of merely exegeting the text itself, though the text itself is extremely profound, and it comes at a time that we watch a widow woman whose husband, now deceased, had formerly served Elijah as a servant, as a mentee, as one who sought to better understand how to release his prophetic gift. It is interesting to note it because Elijah himself had once sought Elijah to better pull his gift out. And I can't help but notice that you always need somebody to help you pull out of you what God put inside of you. Having had that experience himself as he served Elijah, he then had regiments of sons up under him that he trained in the ways of the Lord. And it is interesting to note that he had to be older than his mentees, and yet he had survived something that his sons did not. Hats off to every survivor out there who beat the odds, who lasted longer than the records would have thought you would have been, that you are still effective at this age and at this stage in your life. So it was for Elisha, because his mentee is gone, but the mentor is still standing. So we enter into this cross-generational conversation between not he and his successor or he and his son, but the wife of the successor now comes to him, reminding him that before he died, her husband was loyal to Elijah. That he was a son, as it were, that he was serious about God, and still he died. I have to pause there and note the fact that bad things do happen to good people. The woman is clear. When the wife says you're a man of God, you're a man of God. Ain't no question about it. If anybody knows who you are, your wife does. And it is clear he is a man of God, but that did not stop death. Death has this unreasonable ability to defy reason and pick and choose whoever it will, whenever he will, sparing not the young or the old. There is no guarantee because you are young that you will get to be old. Old is a gift given by God. It is not a promise espoused. To grow old, to live long enough to gray, is a gift given by God. It is not a right that you can assume, so you have to live every day as if you might not make it to tomorrow. Such was the case with her husband, never knowing that he would never finish raising his sons, that he and his wife would not grow old together, that he would not always be there as a force to provide and to protect for his family. Now the force is gone, the strength is abated, and the breath has gone out of his nostrils, and there's nothing left as evidence that he was ever there except for the cry of his wife and the concern of his sons. His absence has left them uncovered. His absence has left them ill-prepared for the challenges of the time. And they have suffered not only the emotional toll of him being snatched out of the house, but also the economic impact, because without him being there, the provider, the provision was gone. And little by little, the cupboards grew empty. And little by little, the pockets grew empty. And little by little, they started living off of promises that they could not fulfill. By the time Elijah steps on the scene, this woman's pockets are empty and cupboards are bare and the creditors are full. And she's down to losing her sons. What kind of mama wants to give up her two sons to pay off her debt? So we know clearly that this was not the way she wanted her life to go, and yet this was where it was, and she was a woman of God. There are other widows in the Bible that it is not clear whether they were truly women of God or not, but this is a woman of God. But trouble will come to anybody. I don't care how you pray. I don't care how you fast. I don't care how you talk in tongues and dance all over the church. That does not exempt you from having dark days and empty days and days of tumultuous winds and complexities. We step into this woman's life not during the good times, but the Bible does mention to us when the cupboards were full and the closets were overflowing and the pockets were overflowing with money. No, because that is irrelevant. God is showing us how to survive emptiness. She had lost everything. The only thing she has left is her sons, and she's about to lose them too. And Elijah comes on the scene and she reminds him who her husband was. My husband was your mentee. He went to your school of prophecy. He was a good man of God, and now he's gone. She's trying in some way to create some relationship with Elisha so that he has a vested interest in responding to her. She doesn't come in her name. Oh, y'all don't hear what I'm saying. Because she doesn't have the clout in her name to provoke a miracle. But she knows whose name to call to get Elijah's attention. And she says, my husband was one of your spiritual sons, and he's dead, and I'm his wife, and they're about to come and get my sons. And Elijah says, what am I to do with thee? What do you do when you meet somebody in a particular slice of their life that threatens to define and deter the rest of their life? What do you do when you meet someone at a moment in time of desperation? What do you do when they're expecting you to do something beyond human rationale? What am I to do with thee? And then he asked her a paramount question. I won't spend a lot of time contemplating it because it's not really what I'm after today. But he asked her, what is in your house? And I think it's important to understand that God will always use something that you already got. Yeah, whether it's a pot of oil or a handful of meal or two fish and five loaves of bread, the miracles start out of normalcy. Miracles are birthed when God begins to magnify that which you have overlooked and thought was invaluable. And it might have been invaluable in your hand. It might not have been valuable in your hands, but it becomes invaluable when you place it in the hands of God. Something as normal as the jawbone of an ass or two fish and five loaves of bread, something that you've been walking past all the time. What the prophet does, his presence illuminates that which you have ignored. What do you have in your house? You're telling me about what you lost. I want to know what you got left. Because God never uses what you lost. No. He's not interested in you giving him a litany and a list about who all left you and who hurt you and who forsook you. That's carnal talk. God doesn't need anything that you lost to bless you. God will always use what you got left. And she says, I don't have anything left. Listen at their discussion as they go back and forth, bantering toward a miracle. As they banter back and forth toward a miracle, the Holy Spirit has only written for us those things that are necessary that our faith might be built up by eavesdropping on their conversation. This is not written to give us the historicity of this woman's life. God does not deal with her bank account during the time that she had a husband. God does not talk about her good days, because faith does not shine in your good days. Faith always shines when all hell is breaking loose in your life. You'll never experience the power of God when you're on the mountaintop. Who needs God on the mountaintop? You need God when you're in the valley and you're at your wit's end and you don't know what else to do. And I wanted to preach about this because I imagine in my own mind, allow me to use my spiritual imagination to illuminate the text. I imagine in my own mind that she had spent many a sleepless nights. The Bible doesn't say it, but I know if they're about to take her sons, you don't go to bed when you're about to take my kids. She had had turmoil and discomfort, and she was stressed out and at her wit's end. And she said, I don't have nothing. I don't have nothing but a pot of oil. I don't know what kind of oil it was, but it's just a pot of oil. It could have been bacon drippings for all I know. A pot of oil back in. I'm out of everything. I'm empty, man. I got nothing. And then he says to the woman who is already in debt, go borrow. Go borrow. Did he not hear me tell him that I am in debt? Who loans to somebody that's in debt? I ain't got no credit. My credit score is down to 200. I don't have no credit. I can't get a car. I can't get a house. I can't get an apartment. My credit is bad. The creditors are coming to take my child. Now I use my children as collateral. I'm broke. And you tell me to go borrow. You have the nerve to tell me that I am not empty enough. I want you to hear that. I want that to sink into your head. That God is saying it's not bad enough. When it gets bad enough, you'll see my hand. When it gets bad enough, you'll see my glory. When it gets bad enough, I'll open up the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing. You don't have room enough to receive. But what you're talking about is child's play. You talked about you in debt. God said, go borrow. See, this is for radical people. This is not for your average, ordinary, superficial Sunday morning person who just happens to have clicked into the broadcast and you were just fooling around and you ran into me. This is not for you, no. This is for radical people who are backed in a corner and shoved to the wall and you don't have no choice but to believe God. Because if you don't believe God, you're going under. If you don't believe God, you're going down. If you don't believe God, you're going to lose your mind. If you don't believe God, you're going to lose everything you got. If you don't believe God, you'll never get out of this. I want to talk to somebody who's in enough trouble to hear this message. Because some of y'all are doing too good to hear this message. Some of you got too much to get this message. Some of you are too intellectual to get this message. Some of you are too full to get this message. God is best experienced from a place of vulnerability. All of this teaching we're doing on praise and worship and how to get glory out of God and all that's cute for people who are not in trouble. It only becomes sustenance when you are desperate enough for the word to come alive. Go borrow. Go borrow from your neighbors. But it is not that he told her to go borrow. That is not what I really came to preach about. Sometime when we start talking about making room for God and we start talking about economic impact and we start talking about God and finances, I'll talk about how sometime your valley isn't deep enough to get God to let it rain. And sometimes you have to dig ditches in your valley in order to attract God, because when God comes, he's going to come with such force that your little problem isn't deep enough to get him to flow in your life. But I don't have time to talk about that today. No. That's for another Sunday. But it's good to write down and to take note of that sometimes the only way to get out of trouble is to get deeper into trouble. And you have to be desperate to receive that, because if you're rational, you won't get that. You have to be desperate enough to throw in your everything and say, I ain't got nothing to lose. If I lose it, I'm going down anyway. I got nothing to lose. Oh, it is your nothingness that attracts God. It is your void. It is the vacuum. It is the abyss of need in your life that attracts God. It is not your stuff. It is not your degrees. It is not your money. It is not your Gucci bag. It is your void somewhere down in your soul. Oh, God, somewhere down in your soul. You got to be empty enough to have a faith experience. You have to be vulnerable enough to have a faith experience. Jesus doesn't need to teach you how to walk when you're walking on concrete. It's only when you're walking on water. You have to be vulnerable enough for God to get your full and undivided attention. God has this woman's attention. And he says, go borrow from your neighbors. Now, it's one thing to be broken. It's another thing to tell your neighbors you're broke. They're already talking funny. They're already looking at you. They're already noticing that the lawn is not manicured and the house needs paint. They already know that you haven't had a manicure and a pedicure. And they already notice that you haven't got your hair down. And God says, go tell your neighbors that you need something. And he doesn't tell them to beg for it in the sense of asking them to give it to you. He said, this won't take long. Just borrow it. When you hear the word borrow, it's like Jesus borrowing the grave. This won't take long. Just let me borrow it. I'm just going through some. This situation that you're in right now will not last. You just need to borrow a solution, because after a while, everything you lost is going to come back. Everything that got away is going to come running back. Everybody who walked off is going to come knocking on your door. This is a temporary situation. And he says, go to your neighbors and go knocking on doors with your sons that they're about to take. Send them out into the neighborhood. Now, when you borrow something, it has to have value. Nobody that's listening at me right now goes up to a bag lady and asks her for a loan. Nobody goes into a trash can and says, I want to borrow some food. When you borrow something, there is a perceived value in order to go after it. And what God says he values is vessels. God says he values vessels. Why does God value vessels when everybody else values content? God says, go borrow vessels. Everybody else goes to Neiman Marcus and they buy perfume. God says, go buy perfume bottles. Yeah. Don't nobody normally go down to the store to get a bottle. I don't want the bleach, just give me the can. God says, borrow. God says, borrow vessels. And not just any kind of vessel. He says, I want you to get empty vessels. In order to get your miracle, I'm not taking just any kind of vessel. Don't bring me a half full vessel. Don't bring me three quarters full. Don't bring me one third full. They must be empty to be eligible. Are you empty enough?